Hey!
Good afternoon, Rand. How are you today?
I am well. Let me turn you up a little bit. I think I have a. Yeah, I've got it. I've got it pretty low. Okay. I'm good now.
Excellent. Good,
Excellent.
good, good.
Good, good, good.
Welcome, and I'm
Welcome,
pretty
and I'm
excited.
pretty
This is going to
excited.
be our
This is going to be.
third and final in our little series that we've done, and I've really enjoyed doing it, and it's been incredibly insightful. And I think we've got a really nice little package of content that I'm going to be shaping up and forming out together. First of all, though, let me just remind everybody, because it's been a while, and I've been to New York. I've been getting involved launching crypto rooms. All sorts of things are happening, and I know you've been busy as well from your email flow. The mindful trading. Mastering Your Emotions and the Inner Game. This book right here, ladies and gentlemen, falls into the market sniper must read category. It's on our new blog list. Get it. You can't get it on Amazon. Get it from Rand's site directly. It's the traders state of mind.com. So it's traders plural and then state of mind.com. Rand Howell. Wow, what an important book for just understanding A, what the problem is, which was our session one, B, first reaction in the terms of the stop the bleeding segment that I did with Rand. And now, part three, and this is the money section really for me, is how do we avoid getting into those situations again? How do we develop mindfulness? All those aspects. And with me, I've got the man and the specialist in that very field. And trading is a mindful game. Rand, big hearty welcome again, and a big up to you. And thank you for everything you've given so far, and looking forward to today.
Thank you. One correction is that the website is actually my trader state of mind rather than just traders. If you type in trader state of mind, it will come to a redirect, but my trader state of mind goes directly.
Great, thanks for that. I took that from the back of the book, and I actually think I remember you correcting me on that before. Sorry, I didn't retain it. Excellent. Well, welcome back. Sunny UK over here. I'm letting a little bit of a beam come through, and I'm putting on my jacket to try and look smart for this clip, but I'm probably going to be sweltering under here. How's it going your side in your neck of the woods?
Well, it's actually acting like summer now here. It's been up into the 90. Well, we're in Fahrenheit, we're the old world, the primitive world. We're in Fahrenheit, but it's a southern summer now, and it's unusual because up until now we've had just obscenely cool weather, and it's like, wow, this is what climate change looks like, is it? Yes, it is. But it's a great summer day in North Carolina right now, so it's good.
Great. A southern summer sounds like one that takes no prisoners, I have to say. Excellent. Let's get on with what we want to discuss, Rand. So somebody has gone through, he's understood the depth of the problem in terms of our session one. He really gets that this runs far deeper. It involves biology. It involves mindset. It involves the fight and flight and the primitive brain. They're starting to get a feel of, wow, there's actually more to this than me just skimming over the side to get straight to methodology. Everybody wants the charts and the methodology, etc. And now they're starting to realize why you operate in such a special space. We then did, okay, breathe. So if the second session was anything, it's stop the fight flight response, recognize it, have sufficient self-awareness, cut it by start deeply breathing again, relaxing those shoulders, recognizing that rarely is it the moment and you need to do anything in a panic sense, and re-going back into the higher mind, which you described so well. Now, where are we on three? How do we become just generally more mindful? Where do we start with this process?
Wow. Mostly is noticing in the same way that when you start noticing your body, and what happens with traders, and I've got a group course that's started right now where they had no idea what was going on in their bodies when they showed up. And then all of a sudden, I'm wanting to know, well, where do you feel the tension in your body? Where do you hold it? What's happening as you trade? And by this time, they're beginning to understand that tension in the body is just not stress, it's emotional arousal. Something is triggered, and you're beginning to feel fight flight build. And what you're beginning to ask is, okay, I can cool that down, but that only cools things down. Okay, that's the emotional regulation aspect. And then that gets you to the door of the mind. It's called, what do you do? How do I develop an observer of being able to look inside the mind and see what in the heck's going on there? Because ultimately, Francis, what you discover, the link between brain and mind, it's you can't separate brain and mind from one another. I know Rene Descartes tried. I know the rationalistic tradition tried. I know that medical science in the U.S. tried. And they finally have come to realize, no, you can't separate brain from mind. In the brain, what you realize is that there is a series of, there's a community of rival emotional programs that are vying for dominance about the organization of a self that interacts with the environment. Okay? That's real critical to understand that, because out of those emotional programs comes the mind.
Yes.
Okay? And all of a sudden, and that's
so the, is the mind like an aggregation of the organic garden of emotional programs? In other words, this aggregated aspect, although it has this variance, it's like lava popping. There's certain ones that have moments of dominance and others. It's kind of like this live organism where there's this ongoing wrestle, and you happen to be the aggregation of that and can actually respond differently to certain situations depending on which template is in the current most dominant front of the grid type thing.
Well, the modus operandi is always self-preservation.
Yes.
And you and you know, we tip that certain of those programs are the ones that can organize, learns how to do that, and that's what we bring to trading. Okay? The key, though, if you begin to grasp it, is that if we begin to look at these programs, these emotional programs, really, when it becomes mind, mind becomes a space where a committee is formed.
Yeah.
And this committee has these different members, and literally those members are the emotional programs that have now been given voice in your mind as thoughts.
Yes.
Thought, from a neurological standpoint, it's just it's an electrical impulse that's happening between neurons. Yet on a psychological level, you know, our thoughts start arising. We have thoughts about this. We have thoughts about that. And they're all rooted into those emotional programs. That's the piece that you need to understand. And it behooves us to develop the capacity to look in and recognize that we are not those programs. We are not those thoughts. We are not those emotional responses. Those are simply a particular organization in history that proved successful for survival.
And we tend to template events that work out well, and we create a sort of chain of association, and we store that, and that becomes kind of one of those future templates. In other words, we think by association. This situation seems to emulate one where I previously successfully got A outcome by doing A, B, C, and then jumping to F. And therefore, we then retemplate the same methodology stroke solution, and it generates a thought that connects maybe with that historical.
Yeah, I actually call that self-image. We develop a self-image for ourselves.
Right.
And the truth is that self-image might be very successful. And when you bring it to another environment, say like trading, the rules are different, and that self-image no longer works. But it doesn't want to give up. It's a comfort zone. It wants to stay there, and it will resist change. And I'll give you an example of this in the
Sorry, Rand, we're getting volume outages. I've had a few short ones there, and I've lost you again. I'm minimizing things on my desktop.
You asked me.
I apologize. We're having volume outages. You're breaking up and you're breaking down. I'm just minimizing everything on my desktop to make sure it's not on my side. We did lose you, and we had a couple of spots as well. If you could just restate that again, and I just want to see if you come back fully.
Okay. What I was talking about is that people, the self-image that people form of themselves,
yes,
is effective in one domain, in one particular area of their lives. And they take it and say, oh, that's me. And then they take that same self-image, and it might be a winner. I'm a big winner. I know how to win. Everything's about not losing. And then they take that same image that has been successful in one domain, and they take it to trading, another domain, and the rules are different.
Yes.
However, the brain, the mind, has had a lot of success with that formula, and it doesn't want to let go.
Yes.
Okay. And it will literally go down with the Titanic.
Yes.
If you allow. And that's something I'm seeing in a group course I'm doing right now, where I'm teaching the mindfulness section of it. And what they discovered is that I do in fact use a sophisticated heart rate monitor to monitor physiological arousal with my advanced students.
Yeah.
Okay. And suddenly they wanted to know all about that rather than the mindfulness. It was like some gimmick that, oh, I can just get this specialized knowledge and I don't have to change. I can just use the knowledge to make change happen. It doesn't work that way. The key is that
it's the human nature. If we can just take a pill and get a solution, we'll always just jump to that rather than making the deep-seated psychological change ourselves.
Cognitive dissonance. Yes, there's a word for that. Don't screw around with my belief system with facts. Don't try to change the belief system I have with evidence to the contrary. And humans, if they want to do success, are going to have to strip that all by themselves and willingly. And mindfulness is the way to do it. How do you produce mindfulness? One is, what I was talking about is the very first thing I do is I start having people observe their bodies. Okay?
Yeah.
And observing their bodies, they recognize tension, but they're no longer seeing tension in the body as, oh, well, that's my stress or that's normal. No, it's not normal. That is emotional arousal. If there's emotional arousal going on, an emotion has been triggered, we know that you're having some event experience with uncertainty.
Yep.
That could produce vulnerability. And out of that vulnerability, you're triggering fight flight.
Yes.
That's what we know when we see that. And you're beginning to go, what is the belief that's behind that whole emotion firing and producing body tension?
So, yeah, carry on. So every time we are in a state where we're feeling any sense of tension, we have to accept and acknowledge one of the first things I want to hammer home, basic rules that people can follow. In other words, give them the bullet points. What do we do? They are, in effect, experiencing a heightened state of emotion, and they should recognize it for that, and they shouldn't lie to themselves and say, no, it's just this, or I'm excited, or euphonize, or anything else. They should straight away acknowledge this is a heightened state of emotion, and that is not necessarily, in fact, for rational decision-making in a trading set of circumstance, it's not a helpful mindset.
If a person is seeking mastery, yes, that's what he needs to be doing. If he's seeking survival, that's probably the last thing that he wants to do. Yeah. And in trading, you really don't have a choice if you want to make money, is you have to master emotions, not deny them.
Yes.
And you have to really begin to see what they are, how they organized, and how they organize the kind of thinking perception you have of the markets, and it needs to shift.
I got that. And let's just repeat that. So trading is the recognition, A, of the existence of the emotions, and the pursuit to actively learn to master them, not to be in denial of them, A, their existence, or to look the other way when you're feeling in a higher state of emotion. And that is such a key point that everybody, it's the raison d'etre for us speaking today, really. And folks need to really take that one on board and say, wow, I've got work to do, because in our natural every day, I'm putting aside emotions. You know, I feel hypertensive on a given day and I'm wondering why. And actually, I just need to say, Francis, you're in an emotional state. Whatever's happened, and sometimes you can't identify it. It might be a summation of minor little irritants, but that have just rubbed you up the wrong way and you've had a succession of them. And you need to just say, and or a lack of sleep on a day, and then what normally would wash over you, now slightly more irritating. And then you then niggle yourself into almost a semi-infected state where you're in a heightened state of emotion. And that just means you're more ready to allow the typical templates of fight and flight to kick in and not to recognize it as quickly.
Yeah, we call that being primed. And let me give you an example. Let me give you an example of this with a person that I'm.
Say again. Unfortunately, we dipped again. Just as you said, that we call that
being primed.
Primed. Yes. Got you.
Okay. You're setting yourself up. You know, you're setting yourself up for an ambush, and you know, as you begin to master your emotions, you realize that there is no good reason at all to set yourself up for ambush. There's no reason to allow yourself to be primed. You turn toward the emotion. You calm the emotion down. You may have, you may not like what it has to say, but you need to be able to calm down and listen to it. And let me give you an example of this. This was an email that I actually answered this morning. A guy says, Randy, you know, I really respect you. I've followed you for years, blah, yada, yada. And he says, here's the deal, is I'm a successful trader up to a point. I'm consistently profitable, but what I do is my cycle is that as I start getting more and more profitable and I start really building the account, I start feeling good. And then what happens is I inadvertently start taking more risk on. I start taking more trades, over trading, and then going beyond.
Accelerating in, the vortices,
yeah,
in, the spiral.
In. Before I know it, I start blowing myself up and I come back to this place. This cycle has been in place for about 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay. What he's not recognizing is that a lot of people recognize fear as something to avoid. Okay. I don't want to feel the fear. Like, you know, if they're pulling the trigger, fear of losing your profits and taking them too early, blah, blah. This guy's experiencing euphoria.
Yeah. As dangerous.
And it's very dangerous. And
I say overperformance begets future underperformance. In other words, it's volatility, and that invariably is emotionally disturbing, disrupting.
And what happens is euphoria is an emotional state that is telling you that the good times are going to roll on forever, is that I'm the one doing this.
Yeah.
And that's when you start building it up and you start thinking, man, I'm doing this.
I'm good at
not
this.
Not the process you're doing, not the discipline you're maintaining to keep a very disciplined approach to the way you have your methodology folding out and doing things. And ultimately, the other key here, and this gets back into this is where it goes back into the mindfulness, back into the observer and looking for belief. Because ultimately, what he basically, I'd also said, and I said, this is where you also need to look, basically, you're producing what I call self-sabotage, okay? And I said, within self-sabotage, there are only four real beliefs that are going to be lurking there that you need to be looking at. And the belief is a sense of inadequacy, a sense of not mattering, a sense of unworthiness, or a sense of powerlessness. And based on what this guy is saying, I said, my hypothesis, my guess, is that it's really about your sense of worth. Is you get to a particular moment, and it's like, you know, you're a kid in a candy store with all the everything there. At the same time, what you're doing is that you're losing yourself back down to an area where you feel familiar, where you feel the worth is there. And a lot of traders get to the moment, you know, it's a magical moment. They go, consistent profitability, boy, that would be just great. But the guy who goes beyond that, the next level is going, okay, what are the psychological barriers that's stopping me from going beyond that? And this is when you start looking at, well, my sense of worth does not allow me to win beyond this. My sense of worth tells me I have to work hard for my money. And, you know, basically trading is, you know, that's about as much work physically as you're doing at any particular time, maybe moving your head a little bit. So there's not this physical work component to it. And he had run up against a belief system to the very valence shelf of the belief system. How do you begin to observe that? This is where mindfulness becomes really, really, really important.
Jack Swager gave a similar analysis in one of his books, Trading Wizards. He always reached $35,000, and then he would lose and blow his account up, and then he'd work it back up to $35,000. That was a lot more money than it is today, but right. It was kind of a mindset, and he had to analyze why, because I think it might have been meaningful. It might have been an average salary in the US at a point, or it might have been double the average salary. I don't know. Or you might have been able to buy a certain asset with that, and the mind locks in on that. And I think that's kind of what you're describing. Or maybe his sense worth was only allowing him that level, you know, a year's expenses at the time. That book was written quite a long time ago. But I find that, yeah, fascinating. Please carry on, because you're just about to get into the mindfulness.
What you discover within these belief systems that become patterned, remember, what you call beliefs are really only assumptions that the brain has taken on as the truth. Okay?
Yes.
And it will deceive itself all the time. But ultimately, these beliefs create patterns that are self-fulfilling. And they go on automatic, and as long as you can't observe them, you're in trouble. And that's the place where mindfulness really kicks in. And there's lots of different places to learn about mindfulness. Certainly, I teach mindfulness, and I teach mindfulness differently than if you're following it as a spiritual path. You know, ultimately, in mindfulness, when you're looking at how do I develop mindfulness in my trading, generally, the way mindfulness works is that it works on a model of where you observe thought arising, you observe thought having a life, and you observe thought going back down into the nothingness from what it came. You're noticing that, yeah, I'm not my thought. I can sit here, my awareness can sit and watch the thought arise, have a life, and decline. I'm not that. And out of that, very powerful freedom occurs, because you realize that you are not your thoughts. You are not your beliefs. Like with this guy that I was talking about, I have no idea at the ultimate level what the belief is. My hypothesis is about his worth that he would have learned during formative period, and that for him to move at the level that he's at, I mean, he's already an independent trader. He's already producing an income. But what he's really asking is, how do I move beyond that? And he's being limited by belief.
Yes.
That he's projecting on the market. And the trading account is telling him that that belief is not effective to be able to produce higher levels of income.
So break down the cure for this man.
Well, the cure is in the is focused on process, and it's actually also examining belief. Is that in mindfulness, what you're learning to do is, for instance, it's like, I've heard it described various ways, where suddenly you're like outside of the self, looking back down on yourself. And I'm not talking about astral projection or anything like that.
No.
I'm just, this perspective.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
This, you're taking a perspective where you can see from a different perspective. Okay. And at other people will feel it, particularly performance artists, when they're in the act of performing, they will say, you know, I was just like watching myself engage with the audience, and the audience and I were one together. And what happened was the music. Now, this is actually a guitarist in a rock and roll band, Turing Trader, that was talking about this. And you're looking for that, or you're looking for a sense of like, you know, something. Can I start noticing what I notice? That's a big deal, because just like this body stuff we were talking about, people don't notice their bodies.
No, that's right. We are not self-aware about our body. It's like the first derivative. You need to notice noticing. That's fascinating. Can I make a comment also on the word belief? It's a word now I'm actually actively stamping out of my diction, because I find it a very dangerous word. It leads you down a garden path. And you gave a very nice paraphrase there where you said belief is an assumption that your brain has taken for truth. And I think too many people tie in a hard truth with a belief system. And it also ties in the rational mind is not constrained by beliefs. It deals with outcomes, probabilities, and rational thinking. And also, it tied into another thing that you made very, very pertinent in the earlier series, is that actively moving up continually into that rational state of your brain and moving out of the place where beliefs and all assumptions that are taken for granted exist actually makes you a higher, more evolved being. You will be more inclined to consider another view. You will be less overly insistent on your only worldview. You will be more open to other things, but not if they're not justifiable at a rational level. And it's we've been trained that being a logician is almost means you're a cold-hearted, emotional person, calculating. And I think that's kind of a misblueprint. And being emotional means you're in touch with self, and you know you're flamboyant and you're exciting. And the logician is the cold, calm, cool, dull accountant type person. If you can forgive the accounting profession, can forgive me. So it's just, am I right if I say that you are coming out of a higher space? And that it is a more evolved state.
You're coming at it. I would like to characterize it as a more evolved place. But I would rather, if you look at it as a multiverse within quantum mechanics, what you're saying is just another potential that an observer is observing is bringing forth. You know, we're the ones who decide that it's more evolved or not. However, you have a great trading account that tells you the way you've constructed your belief systems, is it working in the domain of trading or not? That's the wonder of trading.
Feedback mechanism in the real world. Yeah.
Oh gosh. You know, if we only had it in the real world, you know, it would change everything. So the key is what you're really doing is you're learning how to step back out and say, I accept that I have these assumptions that I have taken for the truth. And I've used those beliefs to project onto the markets. And you begin to ask, what are these beliefs? Like this guy that I was talking about from this morning, I've seen 100 guys like this fellow before. I hate to say it, but it's just simply a stage in the evolution of a trader.
Correct.
You know, first, I
personally can account for having been there myself as well.
Yeah, I mean, at first, all you're thinking about is consistent profitability. Can I be consistently profitable? And you don't even think that beyond that, there's more layers to peel back and to reorganize into higher functioning. And this guy has hit a particular glass ceiling. And what he's being asked now, if he intends to master this next level, is to deconstruct the belief behind that. Okay? And that's what mindfulness or awakening the observer is all about. You do that, you recognize, okay, what happens is most likely, and I'm going to give you a scenario here, Francis, is that the way I view human evolution and stuff like that is that you have a neonate, which is the way I would call it, that is born into circumstances, into a family system, into a history, okay, that young neonate is, you know, it doesn't have an opinion of itself. What it's doing, it's downloading the entire history of its legacy. And it does that by, well, what we're saying now is about 75% of the personality is fully wired in by age 3, okay? And by age 5, basically most of the ways you're going to interact with the world are hardwired. And you're beginning to go, well, all that child's done, all that brain's done is downloaded the history, and it's already there, and it happens before they can think for themselves. The dice is already loaded. And what you're doing with mindfulness, you're just saying, okay, I accept I accept that I'm a historical being, but I need to step back out of that and recognize, well, those are just beliefs that I fell into. I created a narrative, an explanation. That's what my left brain's doing. That's what. And by the way, I would say that logic and reason create alibis or explanations for what the emotional brain has already decided. It doesn't sit independently. And one very great therapist, one of the fathers of modern therapy, once said, we are not, this is actually a science fiction writer saying this, okay? We are not rational beings.
We are rationalizing. Yeah.
If you grasp that, if you grasp what's being said there, you're going, wow. So if I don't develop the ability to observe the self, then what I do is I drift in this ocean of currents that exists and are just simply taking me with them. Yet at the same time, when you begin to observe, you start saying, yeah, I'm in this drift and I fell into it. You know, I'm in this soup, that historical soup, and I'm beginning to wake up and I'm beginning to realize that I don't have to be that history. You don't have to be the mind that you brought to trading. And you begin to say, I'm going to have to develop a new mind, one that's really developed about around managing probability, where reason and logic are rooted into discipline, into patience. Those are the two emotional states you're looking for. When you root them into those two emotional states, you have a very powerful capacity to manage probability. Okay? And it just so happens if you wire down and say, well, these emotional states, oh, these are not the primary five. No, these are not the primary five that basically run the show. What you're looking to do is you're looking to say, you know, what I really need to do is I need to develop these, what would be called more refined aspects of our human psyche. And all of a sudden you realize that self-compassion is an emotional state. And it's very necessary for human survival.
I've recognized psychologically when talking to clients that there is a tendency for the people that are drawn to me to get some virtue out of being excessively hard on themselves. It's almost like if I get in and beat myself up properly, then there's nothing left for anybody else to do. And it foregoes any potential potential criticism. You know, I've already been there and smashed myself through the face on that count. There's no point you coming with a stick now. It's almost a backhanded self-flattery in the vein of calling yourself a perfectionist in that you look like you strive for a higher ideal than everybody else in your execution to everybody else. Others are happy with that, but me, I only want 100%, you know, sky high X, Y, and Z. Is that stemming from a lack of self-worth potentially?
You know, first of all, let's back up before this term self-worth. Let's say what you're looking at, again, is a young brain being born into circumstance and into history, finding a way to survive and to matter in that context. Okay? And a lot of, a lot of people were born into worlds where their parents love them, but the truth is their parents are a little messed up. They've got their own issues. And what happens is when you, in family system dynamics, you discover that everybody is playing roles. They learn a role to be able to survive in a particular family system under circumstances. And what we do is we take that role and we move it forward into adulthood. And let me give you a really good example. A positive example of that is I worked with a guy who was enormously successful as an entrepreneur a number of times. Okay. So, but he was also a control freak.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what you learn during his formative period is that his mother and father, his father had a corporate job and really, really, really wanted to be his own boss and stuff like that. And he tried three times to become an entrepreneur and failed each time, causing enormous financial stress on the family. The third one just busted the family and busted the marriage up. And brothers, one brother went with mother, one brother went with mama. And the brother that went with mama, mom had to get two or three jobs, okay? And there just wasn't enough time around the apartment to just have this loving, wonderful, idyllic childhood. What Matt had to do is he had to manage the house. He had to manage his younger siblings. As an 8-9-year-old, he had to be in control far beyond the capacity that you would normally think of an 8 or 9-year-old. It fed very useful history for him in that he developed the ability of being in control. Hmm. As a matter of fact,
and making decisions, etc. But then also
controlling outcomes, everything. Yeah. And when he graduated from college, he sold a bar business for $500,000. And understand, he started that business before he could even legally drink. Okay? And when he finished college, he started out with $500,000 in the black. Hmm. Okay? And then he just went on and on and on. And, you know, he actually came into trading, worked with me, and recognized what it was going to take to become a trader. And he said, Randy, I came into trading thinking that I was going to learn it as a business, and I knew that it was capital intensive, and I had a heck of a lot of liquid capital, and all I was going to do is learn the business rules. And he said, what I've discovered is I'm going to have to change the psychology that I approach the markets with. And he says, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And very wisely, he chose to get out of trading. Because ultimately what happens, what was very successful as an adaptation for business was a terrible adaptation for managing probability.
Yes. Okay. You don't That's control outcomes. You just can't.
You can't. So the key is, it's not like something is bad or good. What happens is organizing you to survive in a particular environment where that's important. And when you take it from one environment to the next, it just so happens that organization may not work good. And you need to reform the organization of the self, say, the trades. Yeah. That's the key. It's not a value judgment. So what we're looking at is, can you produce the observer that really discerns the patterns and the beliefs behind the way you act?
Yeah.
Because understand this. The word emotion, E is Latin for out of the body.
Yeah.
Motion. Basically what happens, emotions are all about action, getting the body to do something rapidly. And the emotions triggering in nanoseconds to take the electrical energy and move it into the higher brain centers where logic and reason and the trader needs to be. It takes milliseconds, a half a second. The triggering of the emotion has already happened and is already compromising thinking before the information gets to the thinking brain. So what you're doing, you're saying, I need to understand the belief behind the emotion that's triggering. Otherwise, I'm going to continually get hijacked on my way to prosperity. So that's the deal. And it's the hard part for traders, because that's the last thing they want to do, because their brain does not want to experience the discomfort of turning toward a self-limiting belief. It doesn't fit with self-image. I'm a winner. At the same time, is that in trading, you better become a really good loser. You're going to be losing a lot.
Yep, and it happens.
It happens all the time. I work with guys who will lose 66% of the time but make good money. I work with guys who lose only 50% of the time and make okay money. It depends on their ability to take that loss and interpret it in such a way that it doesn't define them personally as a loser. It's just part of how you win in this game. In American baseball, if you have a batting average of 300,
yep, okay, top dog,
which means that means that 70% of the time you're getting out and you're only getting on base from a hit 3 out of 10 times. Hmm. You are in the Hall of Fame. Hmm. Three out of 10. We have better statistics on our side in trading than baseball.
Yep.
Okay. But at the same time, the guy in the batter's box, the master hitter, is not thinking about all the losses. What he's doing is he's thinking about the probability of what that pitcher is going to be throwing, and can he make contact wood on that ball? That's what he's thinking. That's where his mind's at. And so should a trader.
Fascinating. Yeah, absolutely. And so it starts also with a question, though, doesn't it? The person has to be asking more questions about current self. It's almost like the if I'm trying to think, what is the five bullets that we put on a post-it note that sits on the trader's screen and he executes on in the event of this?
First, what mind am I bringing in?
What state of mind am I? And that's biological as well, we've agreed. In other words, have I slept well? Have I argued with my wife? Have I had a scrap at work, or there's some office politics playing and I'm a part-time trader? Or did I have, road rage incident, or drunk too much coffee, or toxicity, or any of the above? And those are all physical things. And we made in the previous session quite an important tie-up between the biology and the physical elements and how it ends up framing thoughts. And everybody thinks it's the other way around. The mind is the all-controlling apex of the pyramid. And how previous
behavioral therapy was wrong. Rene Descartes was wrong. Spinoza was right. And the neuroscience of today recognizes that the emotion emerges, and out of the emotion comes the mind. Okay,
that's right.
So that is ultimately an observation.
And tie that emotion to the biology as well, because I've also have a belief. So there's a certain thing, and I've just said the word belief, and I said I'm trying to stamp it out. So my assessment on balance of probabilities is the following. It helps to live a fairly healthy and well-rested, balanced life to become a trader in the same way it would a professional sports person that does something physical, and even more physical than golf, purely because if you are always in that semi-toxic state or under-rested state, the emotionality you'll be bringing is wrong, and therefore the thought patterns that will be competing to be the winning template of the moment are all the wrong ones, and are victimhood and all the darker, less supportive of what we call the rational assessment mind, which is mastery of emotions for the trading game.
Yeah, it does start physically in that. The point is, if you take a look at the brain as an organ, you ask, what does it need? First of all, it needs lots of rest, what we would call sleep. And we don't really understand exactly what happens in sleep. A lot of people say it's just reprocessing, it's going through memories, it's doing all sorts of different things. But the truth is, what we know is the brain needs a certain level of rest, deep sleep, in order to be able to function well. The second thing is the brain cannot be taxed for long periods of time without severe consequences. It's very common to meet people who think that they should be able to trade for 3 straight hours. Okay? And yet, what I've discovered is that the brain uses glucose as the gasoline that fuels it, and that cognition is an enormous hog of that glucose.
It's CPU hog, isn't it? It's kind of like running a really big application on your computer. It just sits there and woofs up all that computing power. And you can be really exhausted.
I actually liken it to the brain as a 1960s muscle car in the United States, like a GTO. It's got a 396. And even when it's idling, it's going... And you're realizing the moment that you hit the accelerator, quarter of a tank's gone. It's the same way with the brain. It's a muscle machine. It's a muscle car. And what I've discovered is that most people actually need to take breaks somewhere between 30 minutes and an hour a day as they're trading. And it may be like a 5 or 10 minute break, or if you move it up to, well, I'm gonna take breaks at an hour and 15 minutes, your breaks probably need to be 15 minutes. And you need to be sitting there doing something that is completely anti-left brain, like exercising or walking around.
I find that. I trade and work from home with my own business and trading business, and I have the equivalent of a cabin fever very shortly. I eat my lunches out, mainly for the reasons of getting outdoors and moving. And I have a nice steep staircase, and I lunge my way up it with gusto, almost as if to do something physical when I return. And I feel the need to keep popping out. And it's not weather dependent. It's doubly pleasurable if it is a good sunny day like today. But I feel this absolute need. And I think it is that focus. It is deep-seated mental focus. Is concentrating into a laser beam and bringing a lot of force together in a concentrated space. And it requires pulling in all the light from all these levels to get a deep enough beam to get that depth you want. And it's definitely, as you say, an old school Hemi V8 just blurbing up the oil and gas. That's fascinating.
And what you're doing is you're taking breaks that allow the, basically going to the gas station, I guess you'd call it petrol station, yep, and just refueling and starting over. I worked with a plastic surgeon who just did cosmetic surgery, but actually like reattached arms and things like that. And some of his operations would take 12 and 13 hours.
Wow.
Mm. Okay. And he's literally connecting nerves and stuff like that as he's going along. And, you know, he'd been doing that for God knows how many years. And then when he started trading, he still held the belief, well, I can hold concentration like that. He couldn't. The trading mind just sucks up energy, well, with this plastic surgeon, beyond what he had been used to. And he found out that he had to take breaks every hour and a half.
Yeah.
So it's this refueling. And that's just taking care of yourself. That's just taking care of the physical plant that basically the mind comes out of.
Yeah.
Yeah, nutrients and all that stuff really matters. But at the same time, I've what's scary for me is when I work with a person and they come where we're coming into the kind of the rarefied areas of my work where we are using a heart rate monitor and stuff like that, and their heart rate at rest is like 75 beats per minute. I'm going, oh my God, because what happens is that there is no sudden jump into fight flight. There is something called the nominal heart rate at 95, which means you're in fight flight as far as the body's concerned. But what you're looking to do is establish a heart rate that puts you into a particular zone where there is certain levels of physical arousal, but you have not tripped the fight flight yet. And generally, if you have a typical pulse of somewhere of like 65, what you're looking for, okay, you have plenty of room there, but if it's already... And most people want to work with a pulse rate of somewhere between 70 and 75. Okay? You've got some arousal going on. You're alert, you're focused, you're ready, but you're not too relaxed to trade, which is a lot of the problems with the ones that promote a lot of this deep relaxation, this rest, digest. You've got to be alert.
This sounds really useful and sounds like a monitoring tool. I know you said don't lose your mind in the gadgets. We are trying to establish mindfulness and not everything is a measure. But I think potentially this could be a useful tool for traders. If they had just a digital watch that they put on that was just heart rate on there, where should you be? If you're on 65, 70, 75 is just slightly heightened state of awareness and concentration. At what level, if you're a natural 65 beats, resting beats? So when I say resting beats, the physical measure is always sort of waking up in the morning, taken after a full night's
sleep,
really deep breath, you've had REM, you've done it all, you've got your Zio sleep monitor on, you've got a 90 score on it, you've had a proper 8 hours minimum, and you've had undisturbed rest. And your heartbeat at that moment, let's say, is a 65. So 70 to 75 is a working heart rate for your trading. Where would you say we're starting to get into the red zone where you might have provoked fight or flight?
When you start cranking around 78, 77, 78, I call that the caution light.
So that's yellow, and it's close for red, which is 80 into the 80s then, I assume.
When you hit 80 at that heart rate, you should be saying, oh, I need to calm this. I need to calm my body down, because if I don't calm my body down, the mind that comes out of it is not going to be fit for trading.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, the thing is that it takes a good bit of data collection to really zone in on these things. And the real key is you're still looking, you're using the heart rate monitor, and I actually use the one with the strap on it. It's far more accurate than the things that you put on your wrist. But what you're doing is you're saying, okay, these are the areas I'm at, and I actually have apps that, you know, alert you to when you move from one level to the next. That's the, you know,
What's your recommendation?
Francis, I just heard garble.
Okay. Now I'll try again. Am I any better now? We're on our 50-minute mark. I'm going to put the phone down.
Okay.